UCR, what's your favorite scary movie?
Hello out there to all of our uncensored horror besties. It is us back again and ready to get a little bit creepy on your asses. Doing something a little bit different this week. It's
totally radical.
Totally radical. We're skipping way back in time for the story. But have we done a horror comedy before? An intentional horror comedy?
I don't think so.
Sorry?
Did we do Happy Death Day?
No, we haven't. So this is new territory.
I mean Scream, but...
Yeah, but this, I think that was meta. That's meta. This is there's some intentional comedy here, let's put it that way.
This is campy, yeah.
Yeah. It's Katie and I are here to camp it up in the 80s, and we're going to take you with us on a little journey to review a movie that only came out last year. I don't know if we kind of have had this one on the back burner, but today we are going to discuss My Best Friend's Exorcism. That's September 1. That's nearly a year. Wow, okay.
I mean, we're pretty excited about this one, you know, because our pal, Grady Hendrix.
Correct. If you are a viewer of Uncensored Radio, you know that the Halloween before, it's that long ago, we spoke to Grady. We had a very lengthy conversation with the one and only author, Grady Hendrix, and he told us all about, we discussed the book, My Best Friend's Exorcism, and the film was in production and it just wrapped at that point. So since then, this film has come out. Grady's released another book. There's a whole heap of other things. So we might try and catch up with Mr. Hendrix again if we get the chance. But we have to kind of, jump into this one because this is the first book adaptation that he has, that has come out on the big screen. He did do some writing on another movie, but this is the first book. Now, Katie, you're a Grady Hendrix reader, aren't you?
Freaking love Grady Hendrix. I was so disappointed I had to miss out on that interview. I was heartbroken. I love Grady Hendrix. He's one of my favorite authors. I am knee deep in his new book, How to Sell a Haunted House, and it's making me a little antsy in the pantsy, okay? Because your girl don't like this certain type of spooky things. So
very nice. Nice cover.
I thought you were going to give too much away. Nope, I don't want to give too much away.
Something. I was like, no, I'm going to do it.
Nope, no spoilers here on the book.
No spoilers on the book. There will be spoilers on the book and on the movie for this one, though. So as always, if you have not seen or read My Best Friend's Exorcism and you want to, please pause the podcast and come back to join the conversation because we don't want to spoil anything because it's a nice little fun ride. I obviously read the book first when I knew that we were going to when I had the thought of possibly interviewing Grady and I reached out to him, I started to read his books, and then when we got the deadline I was like, okay. So I managed to smash through every one of his horror books up until Final Girl Support Group. And I finished that literally 2 days before the interview. So I got through all of them. And this one's a very interesting little throwback moment for anyone who lived in, survived, or knows of the real 80s. This kind of has that feeling. It's not as performative, I guess, as some movies would have the 80s. There's not everything's neon, and you know, it's not the Party City 80s. This is probably a little
closer to reality. What is your favorite Grady book?
I really actually like All of them. I have a bit of affinity for We Sold Our Souls, which is probably, as Grady said, he's one of his less successful novels off the back of something like Horror Store, which was huge. But We Sold Our Souls was actually a really interesting look at what people do for fame and, the life of, as I said to Grady, every character that he writes, he seems to really be able to flesh out their world. He, as someone who has, performed in bands and has been a performer, he writes that very, very well. And he seems to write teenage girl friendships quite well. I'm like,
I was going to say, as a male writer, he does the female voice very well. I mean, there are some
yeah.
parts where it's like, yeah, this is definitely a man writing the book.
Yeah.
But for the most part, he does a pretty good job with the female narrator voice. I think it's pretty good. And you notice that most of his books have a female narrator. I
Yeah.
kind of like that.
We have very strong female leads, and I think he's been a fan of the paperback, horror fiction for since childhood, so he has an affinity for the strong female lead as well. Did you read the book first, or did you watch the movie first?
I read the book first.
Yep.
Before I even knew the movie was coming out, I was reading his books because, like I said, one of my favorite authors. I really, really love Grady Hendrix. When I heard the movie was coming out, I think I was finishing up. Was I? Fin I think you and I were trying to read Final Girl Support Group together. But
I blazed ahead. I'm like, I gotta finish
you did.
it.
You read ahead, and then
Thank you, Audible.
right.
Right.
I think they're gonna adapt another one of his. Is it Southern Vampires?
Everything, well, every movie, sorry, every book that he currently has out, horror book, has some kind of adaptation attached to it. Well, that as of when we were talking. So, yeah, Horror Store was meant to be a movie, then it was meant to be a TV show. Now they're looking at it as a movie again. There is an option on We Sold Our Souls, but I don't know what's going on with that. Obviously, this one is out. So the Southern Book Club's Guide to Vampire Hunting is going ahead as a TV series. I think Charlize Theron is executive producing that one, so that one's going to be
Nice.
good.
That
Yeah,
one I think
so.
will be really interesting to put
Yeah, that one
onto
gets
the big screen.
the good True Blood kind of,
It's
Southern.
definitely got some Southern Vampire True Blood vibes, that's for sure. Different
Definitely.
time period, but
Different,
still
yeah.
pretty
But
good.
anyway, look, there's plenty of
Yep.
Grady to come, but let's jump into this because, it's what it only came out last is oh, I can't believe it was only last year. Like, it feels like ages ago. But
It
we
does.
are solidly in 1998, 1988, sorry, not
88.
1988, 1988, and we are diving into the world of sophomore high school, and two
Gosh.
longtime friends, Abby and Gretchen. Now, I'm not going to be very nice at some points to some people in the cast, but
I had to laugh.
you tell me.
I have to laugh. I mean, this is probably not what you were gonna rip into, but I have to laugh every time I watch this and they mention, when are you gonna marry Boy George, like move
Well,
into the guest house? Like, oh, honey.
that was the point. In the 80s, we weren't sure. We weren't sure what was happening
If you weren't
with
sure, then you weren't paying attention because that is
George.
glaringly obvious, but
Look,
anyways.
I will give them. I'll give them props. They actually do look like passable teenagers. These
They
two.
do. They do look like pa most of the ca most of the
Most of
cast.
the
Not
cast.
all of them, I'd have to
Not all
say.
of the cast,
The
yeah.
two main characters definitely pass as teenagers.
Yeah. And the book and the movie, I think the book more so really hones in on their reflective friendship. So Gretchen is, pretty much the queen bee. She's the good girl. She has very strictly religious parents. and Abby comes from the wrong side of the tracks. They don't really play that up that much in the movie, but in the book, Abby's family are quite poor. I don't actually think Abby's mother's in the book, is she? Doesn't Abby
she
just
is.
Have a, oh, okay.
She is. Abby just had a, she's not around as often. But
oh, that's just, right. They do have a fight. They have a fight. Yeah, that's right.
And because she's always working. Because dad's not working.
Dad's not working.
In the book, at least. I mean, I think that's what they try to kind of portray here in the movie, that dad's
That doesn't really translate, does it? In this
No,
in the,
it just kind of looks too. Like... And you know what I thought was kind of funny was him passed out in his chair in the morning and... What you think is a beer can is actually a Dr. Pepper can.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to say about this adaption. It feels very PG-13.
It's very, very tame compared to what was in the book.
The book is a lot darker. Scarier. Darker. And just, I think, the intention, like, the character interactions are a little bit dark, especially later on in the book when things get, obviously, a bit more supernatural. Things get darker.
I was kind of disappointed that they kind of half-assed the
possession. Yeah, look, I think the important thing for us to realize is this is one of those cases where you have read the book first and you're hoping that everything that you've imagined and that you've put together in your brain, like...
Yeah.
Translates onto screen. I think for people that want a bit more of the idea of the vibe of this film that could have been, if you look at Jennifer's body.
I'd say
Jennifer's body was more outwardly comedic as well, but it was a little bit darker. You know what I mean? It was a bit more.
A whole lot darker. I'd say this is like Jennifer's body light.
It's just like Jennifer's little sister. Jennifer's little sister.
Yeah, and this is past. Jennifer's body is goth, and this is pastel goth.
Yeah, this is pastel. My little pony goth. You know,
but it's fun. It's a lot of fun, and I think if you didn't read the book, you'd go in and think, "Wow, this is just like a fun, campy movie," and you wouldn't know the details of it. But even knowing the details, it still was pretty true to the plot.
Yeah, it is. The plot is definitely there. And what I liked about the book and what I think this movie actually gets right is that kind of desperation of later in high school friendship when you know that things are things are changing and things are going to end. So Gretchen is going to move. She's moving two states away. So this is kind of their last hurrah together. They're spending as much time as they can together. And you really get that at the end of the book that, you know, friendships and certain times of their life are chapters. I feel like the movie kind of captures it, that this is very, there's a quiet desperation there that we don't really see in teen movies, that, you know, everyone gets a happy ever after and they're best friends forever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that doesn't happen, you know. You don't always get the happy ending. So they're dealing with that, and they've been best friends for a long time. They do have two other friends, Margaret and Glee. Now,
they did Glee so dirty.
Margaret is not a teenager.
No, Margaret is not a teenager. And neither is Glee, and that wig just makes it so much worse.
Look. Interesting choices there. There's some interesting choices made. But we set them up in this kind of late 80s post-satanic panic moment where, like, we're still worried about the satanic outbreak and whatnot, but it's not so much people sacrificing children. The worst thing they can do in this world is drink, do drugs, and have sex. So we are still very much in that 80s movie, you know, trio of complete sin. That's the sin, really. Mm-hmm. And this is the world they're existing in, even to the point where Gretchen's dad is trying to learn to sell real estate in a godly way via audio tape. Like, it's very solidly 80s there, where TV evangelism was really prominent. Like, I remember waking up in the morning and it'd be on TV, and, like, you know, it's, if you were alive at that time, you can smell it. It's like, oh, radio, really, cool.
I really enjoyed the inclusiveness of the Friends group. I like that it wasn't just a bunch of white teenagers in the suburbs. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's relatable because it's not. And friend groups are diverse and they're different. And the relationships are complicated and rocky.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a teenage girl again.
I know. It just reminds you of, like, oh, teenage.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. And everyone say hi to my pussy.
Katie's pussy's out again. on that sense of horror. Always running wild. But what I think they kind of undersell / don't give us is the angst and the outsiderness in Abby's character. In the book, Abby's character, and they do mention it, but they don't really show it. Abby's character has a bad skin issues. Mm-hmm. She is poorer than everyone else. Like, she's on scholarship. But she doesn't look outwardly any different to the other girls, which I think that does a little bit of a disservice to that character, because I would assume, if I wasn't paying attention at the beginning of the movie, that she was just another friend, that she wasn't, you know, poor and going to this school and on scholarship, right. And she was, like, in desperate times.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really, they don't address it. Like, she makes comments like, oh, Gretchen's mom's hamburgers don't need a helper. It's like,
yeah,
that is not necessarily an indication of lower class.
No.
It's not. And having a crappy car as a teenager is also not an indication of being a lower class family. I mean, I had a crappy car and I would say I was poor. Wouldn't say I was necessarily Gretchen status, but, like, I wouldn't say we were in dire straits like they're trying to make Abby out to be.
Yeah, look, I think that would have helped a little bit with why Gretchen's parents look down on Abby so much. And you can, from their first interaction, like, oh, this girl. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, this. That comment about washing your feet before you put them up on the freaking furniture. Like, you bitch.
Yeah, that's just that's a bitch move. That is a bitch move. So we go to a highly religious school. Abby has a bit of a crush on one of the teachers, who is a brother, and there is, you know, nuns.
Morgan.
And, like, brother, yeah, Morgan.
He's a babe.
He's a babe. He looks like a child, though. He looks, like, closer to a teenager than some of the teenagers. Like,
he does look a lot younger than his students. That is true.
He does. But we have that. You have that in high school when you get that hot young teacher. You're like, what? Okay.
He's
so okay. Yeah, he's okay. He's okay.
He's all right. He's all right.
And we also, what about Wallace? So Wallace Stoney is Margaret's boyfriend.
Clearly not a teenager.
Definitely not a teenager, but does do the prototypical high school jock douche very well. He's good.
Very much a douche.
He's very good. That guy did good job. Good job on casting him.
He played his role well. He screwed up in the movie because he calls his girlfriend Fuck Bay, and no one was using the word Bay back in the 80s.
Was it Bay or Bag? Because Fuck Bag's very I'm like, oh, I didn't look.
He says Fuck Bay.
Oh, and okay. So Bay was a little bit...
And I do not recall, and granted, my time in the 80s were, I was
limited.
A lot younger.
Yeah, we
and
were
yeah,
limited.
Yeah, it was quite limited, but I do not remember hearing Bay. And
no,
I don't remember hearing Bay in the 90s either. I hear it now.
Well, I remember in the late 90s because, like, there was a Janine Garofalo stand-up comedy thing about people calling their dogs Bay. Bay. So
really?
It's probably... You know, let's etymology of words. We're going back to university now. But look, that's okay. He's a douchebag, and I get the idea, and you strongly get the idea in the book that he is looking to stick his wick in anything, basically. Yep. A teenage boy. He's a teenage boy. A huge surprise.
Yep.
And we get the idea that, you know, the televangelism, that's really hard to say sometimes, is strong. We see the Lemon Brothers on TV.
That's got to be my favorite part of this movie is the Lemon Brothers. They did those guys so.
Yeah, it's like a weird. It's like a weird WWE meets evangelical Christian moment.
It's good, and I think what is interesting, and you. It's described in the book basically that Christian is the lesser Lemon Brother. But when you see it, like when you see them portray him on camera, it's just so funny because, you know, they've got those brothers all like ranging in strength and muscle mass. And it's just so funny. It's like that one's definitely Christian. like you know from like the jump, like there he is.
Visual, you're like, we get it.
That's him. The runt.
We get it. So as a celebration, is what like one of their last nights of freedom/excitement, decided that they're going to go out to Margaret's parents' lake house, as you do.
As you do. And, you know,
as
you
do.
And you listen to Tiffany.
Now, look, if we were ever in doubt as to where the money went on this production, they would have paid a mozza for some of these songs. They, as soon as we start out, it sets you in the 80s. The music is key. Like, the music's like, tick.
Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah. Do you know what, actually, it just came to mind. Do you know what movie this puts me in mind of? The Babysitter. On Netflix.
I could totally see that. Absolutely. That was a great one.
The music really helps push it. I think that they could have probably lent into that a little bit more when it comes to it, because it seems like they want to do the scary stuff, but they want to do it in a way that is not dark. Like the girls, as they do, they're teenage girls. What do you do in a sleepover? You eat pizza, you talk about people's boyfriends, you talk about how fat you are, et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course,
the Ouija board. Obviously.
Right, the Ouija board. Because across the lake from Margaret's parents' house, there is – now, this was the point of that I kind of hit. In the book, the house across the lake, it's a shack across the lake, right?
Yeah, this is like an abandoned, like, industrial building.
A girl was apparently sacrificed. That was the town rumor, that she was sacrificed to the devil and went missing.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't spend a little more time on the backstory of the house, because that's really what makes it so creepy and so eerie, and why you don't want to go in there and you don't want to get stuck in there.
A big turn in the book there as well. Like, that's a big turning point in the book, that moment. And I think it was undersold. But anyway.
Absolutely.
They get on the Ouija board and it starts to spell out something before something's alive, something's in the closet. So we check it out. And, of course, it's just Wallace being a douchebag.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the douchebaggery continues as, unbeknownst to the girls and Wallace, the Ouija board continues to spell out the word mine as it is, you know, unnoticed. But to aid their celebration, they decide to partake in a little LSD, which is cute little owls. I'm like, aw, they don't look like they harm anyone. It looks like the Scholastic Owl, actually. It's like, I'm going to sell you a book. Now you're going to trip balls. So they all attempt to trip balls and go for a bit of a skinny dip, except for Abby, who obviously doesn't want to get wet too because of her makeup will come off, et cetera, et cetera.
Someone didn't teach her about a good setting spray.
Right. Well, it was the 80s. You never know. So we see it's, I guess, the pack mentality of teenage girls where Margaret makes a comment about the acne, this apparent horrible acne that Abby has, which, you know, isn't really obvious to anyone.
I was going to say, no one ever sees this acne. And
oh, you kind of see it a little bit later on, but I'm like, I needed to see that earlier.
Yeah, and well, it's a huge focal point in the book. Like, it's just it's debilitating to her. Like,
if anything, it should have been the first scene when they were talking on the phone. She should have been putting makeup on.
Yeah, well, she was, but it didn't like show any of like the acne cover getting covered up. It just shows her like putting on makeup.
But it should have been like bare face. We see the acne.
Yeah,
she puts on, then goes out into the world. You know, that's what it should have been. Like,
that's exactly what it should have been, because that's basically what the book was. It talked about her like spending really solid chunk of time putting on makeup because
every
the acne
morning.
Is so bad.
Yeah,
and, yeah. I think that would have been a pretty focal point.
I think it's a good. It's probably maybe a filmmaking choice, and you know, show not tell. I feel like we would have gotten it more if you would have just shown us it, like, and not referenced it like it's this big thing. It's like, okay, it's not really.
Yeah, like you're talking about this acne problem that we don't see her having.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, Abby gets offended / upset and runs off into the woods, as you do. Gretchen, being her good bestie, follows her. They talk about how much, you know, they love each other, et cetera, et cetera. There's always this, and I think it's a little bit more heavy-handed in the book, that this friendship is a little bit sapphic. I do mention the word sapphic. Like, there seems to be, like, a questionable moment, like, what the relationship is. And sometimes you get that in these teen movies where one girl is idolizing another and they really go for it. But their friendship is a little bit, I don't know, it sits on the boundaries there, I think, and intentionally so in the book, because of what is about to happen and what happens afterwards. You want, Grady's trying to create doubt in the book. And they don't really have that time here. But anyway, they decide to do one last adventure together as they stumble across this shack that has turned into turned into a house. Not even a house. It looks like an old factory.
Yeah.
Like the site of the ritualistic satanic murder, you know. And I think that they even make, like, it's a little bit of an inside joke when she's like, wow, it looks so much bigger on the inside. I'm like, okay, that's pretty funny. So they are wandering through the dark, and we're constantly getting this message of evil alcohol in the like zeitgeist of the kids. Like, I guess it must be like, you know, Alco Pops getting their first run, because they're like grape flavored and da 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 da.
I liked the I can't remember them off the top of my head, but I liked the names that they came up with for these sweet alcoholic beverages. I thought it was great.
They're obviously aimed at younger people, and look, very smart social commentary on Grady's point. Like, this whole, every book he has is full of commentary if you choose to look at it and find it in subtext. But the girls find, you know, strange things happening in the dark. There, the darkness seems to envelop them, and they come across a strange I guess it's a creature. I feel like in the book it was like an altar, right? It wasn't a creature.
It was an altar, and the creature was like in the altar.
Yeah, it didn't visualize very well, and I don't think they focused on it very well here. It was too far back. I was like,
well, because you only got a quick look at it, really, and you know what it kind of looked like? It looked like the book in Hocus Pocus, real quick.
Right? Like,
when you're looking, because all you see is the eyeball. It's just
book.
There's that.
Show up. And she's like, hello. Sanderson's and sister. So anyway, Abby does what a sensible person should do, and gets out, and you know, quite quickly, and accidentally leaves Gretchen behind. She falls, hurts herself, and gets trapped in the house. Now, I thought this was interesting, the way they did that, because Gretchen could hear Abby's voice in the house, and Abby could hear Gretchen's voice out in the woods, and we didn't get that in the book. We just got Abby running scared. And the asthma thing is not really played up a lot either. And you go, oh, that's right, she has asthma.
Mm-hmm.
Like we didn't really get that a lot in the movie either, but it's quite the character trait in the book that she has this asthma problem. She doesn't have her inhaler. She's running through the forest scared. And something grabs Gretchen and drags her into the darkness. Now, script mine. That was kind of, let's go, like, what, Are You Afraid of the Dark level scary?
I feel like it
could have been more.
Yeah, that was a definitely Nickelodeon scare, but it's still effective.
Sometimes that Are You Afraid of the Dark scary is scary. I'm like, damn.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I watch those back. But anyway, the other girls come and, you know, try and discover where Gretchen's gone. And I feel like the search is a bit bigger in the book as well, but we have to shorthand things, obviously.
Well, right, because she like floats down the river naked or something like that.
Yeah.
In the book.
Yeah, there's nudity. There's a lot more, but I guess, again, this is like the PG-13 version of it. She just turns back up, and she's like, oh, okay. And I've got to give it to this actress. When she gets it right, she gets it right. I think that the director needed to push her more. I think she had the potential to do more with that character, but this is where I'm going to kind of, I think the problem, and I'm not going to really sugarcoat it, I think the problem with the movie is Abby. The actress that plays Abby is not, either doesn't have the range or wasn't coached the right way, because every reaction she has is the same, whether it's fear, whether it's hurt, whether it's like, it's just this wide-eyed.
Very Kristen Stewart-esque.
Yeah, but there's not anything behind it is my thing. Like, it's performative in a bad way. Whereas I think the actress that played Gretchen has those moments and will have more moments later on.
You know who she kind of reminded me of was Anna Sophia Robb. Is that her full name?
I think so,
Carrie in the Carrie Diaries. She looks a lot like her.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, no shitting on Elise Fisher, but I think that had the director maybe pushed a bit more, like, I think it needs to be a little bit more, I don't know, psychological. But anyway, back at school, we see that things are not quite right with Gretchen. Mm-hmm. And this is the beginning of when the Lemon Brothers show up at school to show the strength of their Christianity. Strength of Jesus. And Christian, the youngest runt brother, notices something off with Gretchen in the audience. Now, I don't think she was that off, to be honest. I feel like...
No, she just kind of looked like she's hungover and having a rough morning.
She didn't look like she did good sleep.
Yeah.
But this is where I think we fall off a little bit, because the book does it really well in making us question whether something has actually happened to Gretchen, something supernatural, or whether she was attacked in the woods, because they do play that up a lot in the book as well, that there are homeless people, et cetera, in that area. She could have been raped, rah, 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 rah. Mm-hmm. Or whether this is a friendship fracture and Abby's seeing things that she's projecting onto her. That happens more in the book, where we're like, oh, is this supernatural? There's a big, like, is this supernatural question for a long time, and I think that they've missed that a little bit. Again, maybe for time, because this movie, like, literally sits just over an hour and a half. It's one of those. It's like in Out, Shake It All About, You're Done movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that we lose that a little bit. What do you think? You read the book.
I think they show Gretchen's downfall pretty gradually. I feel like it happens a lot quicker in the book.
Yeah, she's instantly different. Like, and that's, I think we should have seen that maybe a bit more. Like,
right, and like she, in the movie, is just kind of like
a little bit pale. So.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, she's like, it was a bad trip. I'm hungover. I'm not feeling it. And you kind of wonder, was it really just a bad trip? Is she mad at Abby because Abby ran like left hell and her, left yeah. her there? But you got to think, like, Abby thought she was right behind her. Like, I believe yeah. Abby when she says, I thought you were right behind me.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, teenage girls, as a former teenage girl myself, We are very fickle. We are very pissed. And when a Christian is looking at her from the stage, you know, he's terrified. He's visually just kind of like shocked, like, oh my God, this is happening. And Abby says it to him, like, you look like you saw a ghost. And I don't think she was that bad. Like, when you were, you know, you play it up, she's not looking that rough yet.
No.
Like, again, she looks like she's hungover. She looks like she had a bad trip. She looks like she's mad at her best friend. But yeah. She doesn't look possessed.
And like, if it was going to be that gradual, it needed more time.
Yeah.
But it's time we didn't have.
And, you know, and they're trying to show the personality changes pretty quickly. Like, you know, she's mouthing off to the teachers. She's taking a leak in front of the class, like, okay.
Being in a trash can, that was an interesting choice. I was like, okay.
That was a real interesting choice. And again, it's not that outrageous. Like, I mean, yes, it is, but like, she's a teenager. We're moody, you know? Like, who didn't mouth off to their teacher every once in a while? I mean, I can't personally say that, you know, I pissed in a trash can in front of my classroom, but, you know, if I could go back in time, I guess I'd, you know, try to do it.
Oh my goodness. Interesting choices. Interesting choices. But so we get this, we get the kind of gradual, in the book, it's like a rotting, really. She starts to degrade.
And she kind of explains it to Abby, like, I can't get undressed. Like, it's always looking at me. Like,
and yeah, that sounds... there is a he that she says is watching her.
Yeah, and you know,
let her get dressed. She doesn't want to be seen naked, etc., etc.
And there's a feeling of paranoia there, but not necessarily like. I get why Abby's kind of like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you sound crazy.
Yeah. And the jump to the rape assumption seems a little bit out of the blue as well in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't get that, you know, this is where the bums hang out and drink kind of thing with the abandoned place. Like, yeah.
Right. And Wally correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Wally show up with the girls? Like, he showed up with Margaret and Glee?
Yeah.
So, like, you can't really assume it's Wally because Wally's... Yeah. I mean, I guess you could, but... In the book, it makes it more plausible.
Yeah, there's more... There's doubt. That's the thing. There's doubt in the book. Even up until this point, there's doubt as to what's actually going on with mm-hmm. Gretchen. And I think that for what we missed out on with the makeup and everything, show us, don't tell us. We needed a little bit more tell us, don't show us in this. We needed to feel it. Like, we needed to feel her degrade a little bit more. And because she's meant to be this pure, like, you know, popular girl, I don't see it happen. Because in the book, she stopped showering. She, like, her appearance really takes it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Gretchen is still... like losing the shit, like vomiting on people and stuff like that.
But, and I feel like the school turned on Abby a lot quicker in the movie than in the book. But again, it's a time thing, and I get it. Exactly. Like, when the nuns, like, you know, they knew you were going to try to defame her, I'm like, wow, that happened really quick. Like, they're still talking. Like, I feel like they started doing that when Gretchen was a lot further into the possession and, like, really kind of ditching her.
Totally. But, yeah, look, I feel like it jumped around a little bit to the whole rape thing. I did like that they kept from the book that, you know, the worst thing for Gretchen's parents wasn't that she was potentially raped. It was that she was drinking and doing drugs.
Yeah.
It's like that was leftover. That was a good, like, it's worse in the book. It's just like, oh, how could she do this? It's like, wait, what? You're like, your child was possibly being raped, but you're worried about her drinking? Okay, cool. No worries.
I kind of liked the conversation Abby had with her mom. Is it true what Nancy Reagan says, that one time doing drugs can ruin your life? I'm like, wow, they hit that, like, right up. Like, that reference was just perfectly nailed. Just perfect. I really enjoyed that. And the mom just, keep your nose clean. Like, oh, you think she's doing coke? Okay.
Yeah. And then we start to see, I guess, the more supernatural, like the things are super, like she's self-harming and stuff now. Mm-hmm. But again, it kind of comes out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we do get that one scene in Gretchen's bedroom that, you know, with the covers being pulled off and her seeing a shape emerge in the covers that are on the floor. But I think we needed to see that happen as well, because in the book it happens gradually as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a more insidious, like, slow burn, but we don't have time for a slow burn.
Right.
This school carnival scene wasn't in the book.
I think it was.
Right? Was it?
No, I'm pretty sure it was. Maybe not to this degree, but I'm pretty sure it was referenced.
Yeah, look, I thought it was the kissing. I thought it was more about the kissing booth in the book, but okay, it's been a little while.
Yeah, they it might have focused more on the kissing booth in the book, but the carnival was definitely in the book.
Because we're meant to get the idea now that Gretchen, the supernatural powers that are possessing Gretchen, are now starting to reach out and corrupt everything around her. This is where, you know, They dunk tank Abby, and again, for like, who cares? Because we don't really know, like, about the
acne thing. Yeah, and her makeup was fine. Like, it didn't look messed up. Like, nothing was, like, running. Like, if you're gonna play up that she's really upset about it, like, at least make the makeup, like, dripping off her, like, looking all screwed up. She looked fine.
Yeah.
She just looked like a wet rat. Sorry. It's true,
I don't know. It was a little bit weak for me. And then, like, literally the next day, we get Mean Girl. Like, Mean Girl Gretchen is there, like, styled up. She's like, ready to. And we, like, everyone loves that part in the movie. You know, in a possession movie, we're like, oh, she's going Mean Girl. This is it. It's happening.
Yeah. It's funny you say Mean Girl, because the shake thing is very Mean Girls.
Yeah, so she Gretchen is taking out the friend group, literally. Margaret and Glee both get, you know, dealt with. So we've had this, you know, lesbian love affair kind of simmering underneath the fact that Glee is in love with Margaret and da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Margaret, who is self-conscious about her weight, which, again, I don't think is really that much of a forefront in the movie. It's kind of like all of a sudden she sees Gretchen with this supposed weight loss shake, and she's like, I'll have it. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, in the book, she talks about it a lot more.
Constantly. She's drinking, like, diet soda and stuff, isn't she? And she's like,
she's always talking about her weight. Like, the one reference in the assembly, like, I've gained 2 pounds. And, like, okay, that's, like, her, like, conversation.
It doesn't feel like it's enough, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't. Like, I get that there's time conflicts here, but if you're going to hit the reference, you got to hit it hard.
You got to hit it from the get-go, like, yeah.
Yeah, you got to make it way more obvious, because people who haven't read the book won't know, but I guess then it's, you know, blissfully ignorant. They don't know that they're missing this piece of context that's kind of important to the character.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Matt Grip becomes ill. This was my favorite weird, like,
it was so cool.
Favorite part in the one of my favorite parts in the book, but they managed to actually do it in the movie. I was like, okay, cool. Obviously, they played it for a lot more comedy in the movie, but in the book, it's sheer body horror. It's like, oh my god, she's like, we see some, like, she becomes sicker and sicker and sicker and literally can't eat until Margaret, you know, opens her mouth and a giant tapeworm emerges that her dog grabs and drags out of her. I'm like, oh wow, that's intense.
I'm not much for body horror, but I think I would have enjoyed seeing it a little more gruesome.
Right, yeah.
But again, that's more, you know, that's more goth versus the pastel goth that they're going for here.
Exactly. In the meantime, Poor Glee has been bamboozled by Gretchen as well. She's had a love note, an unrequited love note put in her locker that she thinks is from Margaret.
Yep.
And Margaret outs her. Well, I don't know what kind of friend that is, but, you know, outs her to the entire school. But even though apparently they were like, what happened last summer? So something happened, obviously. There was like a little bit of But so poor Glee's upset as well. But you know, Gretchen tries to make her feel better with a brownie that just happens to be nut filled. Now they did mention the anaphylaxis a few times. Congratulations. Yeah. So it wasn't as dramatic, but
right. And
it didn't feel, I don't know, she was good here. Like, I feel the girl that played Gretchen was good here, but she wasn't, like, capital E evil either. Like, if she was holding on to the pen or something, it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think in the book, like, she taunts her with it or something.
Yeah, she taunts her and stuff. It's a lot darker. But Gretchen basically nearly kills her. So that Abby is all alone, really, and the demon, which we are now rapidly becoming aware of, is you know, taking over. The pig thing was cool. I did like the fetal pig. Oh, well, they weren't really fetal pigs, they were fucking full grown baby pigs that they were gonna dissect. That was actually quite cool. I feel like they could have played that up a bit more too. It was an actual horror moment. I was like, oh, okay. And that Abby had a dream that she gave birth to the pig. And it was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's psychologically different. But you know,
I missed out on that part in high school. I we only did frogs, but man, I skipped out.
Nope,
not for me. I wrote the essay instead.
So Abby thinks the only logical thing she can do is reach out to Christian over some yogurt. And
this guy goes, like, I get it. When it's good, it's good. Like, I get it. But man, they played that. Of all the things they could have played up.
He wants that yogurt.
Yeah, he's going for that yogurt.
He wants that yogurt.
That's bad.
So he agrees to perform an exorcism. He's already told her that, you know, she's possessed. As soon as he looked at her, it's like, okay, cool.
I have the power of discernment.
Yes, right. So they make a very, it does seem very out of the blue in the movie, to kidnap her, take her to Margaret's parents' lake house and perform an exorcism. And this part is a couple of chapters in the book.
Yeah.
And it really gets intense. It gets psychological. It gets dark.
It gets dark. Really dark. And yeah. I wasn't unhappy with it in the movie, but the book does a much better job.
Yeah, it happens really quickly in the movie. It's like, oh, we throw a bit of salt, we throw a bit of holy water, but still at this point in the book, we're questioning, is she possessed? Because the demon lets Gretchen be present and it looks like he's abusing her, like in the book. Like in the book, questionable whether he is actually doing the right thing. Still at this point, like, she suffers. She suffers through the exorcism, but we don't see that.
Yeah.
That's like, the problem, I think.
In the book, it goes into great detail about how she is just really kind of going through the ringer through this exorcism. Yeah. And I get it. You know, exorcisms are supposed to be very grueling and gruesome, and in horror they're very dark and tense and scary, and again, this is not that. Like, if you are looking for an exorcism movie with some real kind of body horror, this ain't it.
This isn't it. Yeah. Like, they shorthand it by, you know, Abby having seen the name of the demon on the wall in the house, so she can give the name of the demon straight away, and he knows who the demon is. Yeah. So Andrus the demon, you know, and we get the full description of who Andrus is and the legions he commands. And it all seems to happen really, really easily until Andrus takes the form of Christian's dead mother. I actually liked this, but I wanted more horror.
I wanted a little more horror. It seems like kind of a little throwback on, like, the exorcism with the demon, take, you know, throwing voices and but again, you know, that was actually very scary.
And that's enough for Christian to leave, though. Like, I feel like, oh, that's awkward.
Well, like, he starts, well, in the book he really starts doubting himself, like, I need help, I gotta go.
He thinks he's killing her. That in the book he thinks he's killing her, and he's losing his mind because of the demon, that he's doing something to her. And for the, like, and he's never seen again. He's just gone.
Yeah, he
which is random. In the book, he's still part of the. You know what I mean? He's still part of the story, but he just fails in this. It's like, oh, okay.
No, that's it.
Yeah, it's an awkward. It's a bit clunky, I think, but I guess we're supposed to really push on the power of friendship and da-da-da-da-da, you know. Yeah,
it's a rushed exit for Christian.
It is a rushed, and I feel like it's a rushed ending as well, because the idea that Abby is left, Abby, who is Jewish, is left to perform the exorcism and adopt a faith that isn't her own in order to save her friend, and it's more about the power of friendship and the power of belief and stuff like that in the book, whereas she kind of just accidentally stabs him with a fire poker. It's like, oh, okay. And then
that worked.
Yeah. Gretchen's gone. She's out. She's like, bye. And then the end was, I feel like we're like, oh shit, we've ran out of time. To me, that's what this ending feels like. Because we do get, in the book, we do get Abby's, you know, instead of religious iconography and religious, you know, situations, she does employ the power of the friendship and, like, recites, like, special moments that they've had and, like friendship secrets. That's what the power of that is, what's driving the demon out, the love of the friends together.
Yeah, the power of
purging
power
the
of
evil.
Love.
Yeah, you know, the power of love. And then Gretchen,
just need Huey Lewis in the background.
We couldn't afford Huey after all the other songs. Gretchen literally purges Andrus from her, and the demon is little. He kind of looks like Dobby the house elf's had a really rough day.
Well, I found that the myth of Andrus, he was a great marquis who commanded 30 legions that has a body of an angel and the head of a raven cat owl, riding a black wolf and carrying a pointed saber.
Yeah, not really what we get.
No. We got the dollar store version of Andrus.
Yeah. Look, animated well, but not scary.
No.
And the performances from the girls don't really lend me to believe that they're that frightened. Like, this shit's going on, and everything kind of fell off here for me. I was like, oh, that's a bit upsetting.
Yeah, if you're gonna put some money into anything, it should have been this scene.
Yeah,
this should have been it.
Yeah, and really drive the tension, drive, like, push those actors to give a performance that's convincing yeah. because by the end of it in the book, they're both like nearly dead. They're like, ugh. Yeah. But we use an old bottle of liquor and a lighter to, all you've got to do is set Andrus on fire, apparently, and he's gone. Mm. Abby and gets a hug, and that's really the end of the movie. Like, they say their goodbyes, and then, you know, they...
That's it.
That's the end of the movie. Like, literally, they question where the address is gone, and look, the owl on the... We get it. The owl on the telephone wire is suggesting that, you know, he's still around, that the evil is still out there. But mm-hmm. we don't... It kind of just ends. Like, we get the postscript of everything and ha-ha, funny, funny, but... I wasn't satisfied with the ending. Let's just put it that way.
The book ending is so poignant.
Yeah.
And they really cheapened out on that one too. I was disappointed.
Yeah. The book ending shows that, you know, some friendships are only for a certain time in your life. Like that time of their life was powerful and it's strong and it,
mm-hmm.
it was enough to defeat evil because it was that limited time that they had together where they were so intertwined and they had it's like it you know
yeah
they created that magic and that strength with their friendship and the book is bittersweet in its ending and I liked that about the book. It wasn't everyone gets a happy ending.
Like it's happy enough yeah. Like it's not an upset ending. It's a very realistic ending
in the book.
Like it's a very realistic portrayal of a friendship evolving.
Teenage friendship as well. Yeah. Like, and realizing that the people that you would die for in your teenage years aren't necessarily in your life when you're an adult at all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think Grady wrote that really beautifully. And as I said at the beginning, captured that desperation point of, you know, the final summer together or your time running out and that was really captured well in the book and it didn't really translate into this. And the only thing that I could think that would have been good is maybe if this was a mini series and it was two parts.
You're like a Fear Street kind of thing. Like
take us up to the point where we go, oh, it's actually a demonic possession. And then the second part is more about the possession.
Yeah. I think that would. And you could get into more detail with it, too.
Yeah.
Like, you can get a lot more detailed on a lot shorter time.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it would have been better as a miniseries.
Yeah, like, just two parts. Like, what? Even if it was an hour and a half each movie, we would have had time to get to know the characters a little bit more. And then the payoff would have been bigger at the end.
And for, like, a Grady Hendrix, now, these characters are very detailed. He's very purposefully detailing his characters. Yeah. It's like, that's what he takes his time doing. Like, you care about these characters. And I don't think the movie did it justice. I mean, I liked the movie overall. I think it's a really fun movie, but I feel like they really did a disservice to his characters.
By shorthanding it, yeah.
Yes.
This is, I guess, the trade-off for when you let your art be interpreted by other people because mm-hmm. they're gonna do what they're gonna do to it unless you have complete creative control, which is very rare, unless he was gonna direct the movie himself.
I
agree. It's not a horrible movie, but having read the book and knowing how strong and actually poignant and moving the book is by the end of it,
mm-hmm.
this falls pretty short of what
Agreed.
The book is about.
Agreed.
So how many tapeworms out of five, Katie?
I would give it a solid 4 out of 5 tapeworms. I really enjoyed it. It's a fun ride. I love camp. I think camp is probably one of my favorite subgenres of horror. I don't think it gets enough credit. However, for taking material like Grady Hendrix, whose stories are very character driven, this movie probably shouldn't have come out on something like Amazon. It deserved a bigger budget. It needed something to give it a lot more oomph.
Yeah. And or even a limited, maybe even a limited series, like what they did with, last summer. Like,
or a limited series. Like, it needed more time. I think if it had a little more time to get more deep into these characters, even just the small details that make these characters so important, it would have been a really perfect movie. But it was it was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. And it's rewatchable for sure. It's still fun to rewatch.
Cool. I'm going to go 3. I do have a problem with the performance of Abby. I feel like it doesn't give me the layers that the character gave me in the book. And I wanted more from the performance. Like, there is a real desperation to save her friend. And I don't get that from this actress. I don't get her fear. I don't get her being other. It's all very one color.
Mm-hmm.
And look, that could be down to just time and scenes that are cut and the director and all that kind of thing. And I don't like to shit on it. It's not a bad performance. It's just not a deep enough performance for me for the character.
Abby's a complicated person who has very big problems for such a, like, I don't want to say a little person, but she's young. She is too young to be experiencing these kind of difficulties. And yeah, I agree with you. That actress did not give that kind of performance. You don't see the desperation. You don't see the angst. You don't see the pain that Abby is feeling. You just kind of see someone who's like, I have acne.
Yeah. But we can't
Palmer.
Really see. We can't really see.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, I only thought of the limited series just then, but if we had 5 or 6 episodes and you could really amp it up, then I think that would have sat better. And they weren't afraid to go dark, because let's be honest, right? We all go, oh, PG-13 horror. We know what that entails. But look at what they did with Fear Street on Netflix.
Oh, God.
That was genuinely scary and horror, like capital H horror.
Yeah.
Like, young audiences can handle it. Like, it's not, we don't need the Nancy Reagan saving us. Like, they can handle it. And Fear Street is probably, still stands out to me, nearly 2 years, I think, since it came out, as one of the better horror things that we've seen, that we've reviewed. Like, that got its chance to play out over 3 parts, obviously 3 movies, but imagine if this had the time, that time, it would have been more, I think. It would have meant more to people.
If I can give any sort of advice to the people who are adapting his other work, is really, really take your time with casting and make sure you are just going for these characters, because that's it. Like, yes, the plot is important, but his stuff is character driven. It's all
I think the series is the way to go with the majority of Grady's stuff. I think that if they can get away with doing it as a limited series, like they're doing with Southern Book Club's Guide to Vampire Hunting, that's going to be a series. Mm-hmm. I guess How to Sell a Haunted House could be a movie if it's done right. If it's done right, but a lot of his other stuff has a lot of character backstory that really matters to the point. And I think there are certain things you can shorthand, but this movie proved that there are certain things you can't shorthand as well. Mm-hmm. I did enjoy it. I think it's a good movie. It's not horrible, but it could have been better.
Yep.
So, 3 tapeworms for me. And look, we always have the book. If when in doubt, you can always go back and read the book again, which is good.
Read the book. Read all of his books. Awesome.
If you have a favorite Grady Hendrix book, please comment and let us know, because a lot of them are becoming TV series and movies and stuff, and we'll have a look at them because we love him. So thank you for joining me today, Katie, on our little trip back to the 80s. It's been swell. And we hope to see you all again sometime soon. You never know, we might take a trip back to the 80s and review something 80s-tastic soon in all its glory, but more on that later. Until next time, my little friends, keep it creepy, and we'll see you in your nightmares.